Michigan HockeyCast 4.13, where we will enjoy chanting just like football at many teams this year. I found it amusing that you are surprised the amount of variations or brands of ranch dressing that can be in a supermarket.
No, I'm not surprised. I just think we don't talk about it enough.
Well, that was the amusing part, is what else is there to say other than there are 20 different kinds of ranch dressing?
Well, you know, I was in the store.
And I assume Meijer.
Meijer.
It's where the drains shop?
Yeah, it's vastly superior to all the other one. I was there today, and this is the beauty of Meijer, right? Is that I was there today buying no food products, but all the stuff you can get at Home Depot, I was able to get there. I got those
not all the stuff.
Well,
but...
sure, yeah. I wasn't there buying an auger or something.
Were you buying lumber?
But I was getting, you know, those sticky things you put on pictures to put on the walls.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And, you know, painter's
like home decor stuff
and
yeah.
Sharpies, and then I, you know, got a few other things, okay. Right? Well, so my new apartment has a very devilish setup, but the...
Devilish?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
The electrical outlets are some of those where they're controlled by a light switch, depending on whether they have power or not.
Sure.
So there's like three switches on the wall. And two of them control lights, and one controls, like, whether the outlets work or not. And so...
That's great!
If at night you're going to turn on the light or whatever, and you hit the wrong switch, then you just zap the TV and all the other stuff. So I needed to get painter's tape and Sharpie to just, like...
Just go over.
Cover that, yeah. Do not touch this, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why I was at Meijer today. And that's what you can't get that at Bush's, that sort of stuff, right?
Okay, so back to
clothes,
20 kinds of
or
ranch
toys,
dressing.
Or all, that's why Meijer's is great.
Sure.
But the ranch dressing, I was just there and I was just like, you know, just looking up
so you
and
wanted
down
ranch dressing. That's where this started?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I was just looking up and down the aisle and there's just like 30 different versions. And, you know, I mean, I have always used Hidden Valley. Because that's
for a ranch.
Yeah.
So what if you get a different kind of dressing?
But then even Hidden Valley's got the like six different kinds.
Well, there's
like,
the light.
The light, and
but then there's the
like,
no fat,
the twangy, and then the spicy, and then the jumbo bottle. You know, and then...
where you just start chugging it. I guess.
Well, no, the jumbo bottle is like if you don't want to have to buy this again until 2072.
Back the truck up to your apartment to unload it.
So that's what I was there doing. And I was walking by the mayo section where I saw Duke's Mayo, which I know now is a thing.
Oh, right, because of the bowl game.
Because of the bowl game,
Did you have an impulse to, like, dump it on your own head?
Yeah, but I don't really eat mayo much.
Yeah, I don't at all.
So, I don't know, but...
So do you get other kinds of dressing or just ranch?
I have ranch and I have Italian.
Okay. So a couple of the basics. Two different, like, consistencies.
Yeah. I mean, I like a lot of different kinds of dressings, but I don't need
that surprises me.
But I don't need to have them, you know, in the house. So.
Sure. Because you seem like the kind of guy who, and we've talked about this off air, which is why I have this opinion, but who likes one thing, and if you like the thing, you eat the thing.
What are you referring to?
Well, like when you go to a restaurant.
Well,
do you generally get something, or do you have, like, an array of things that you get?
I mean, I normally get the same stuff at restaurants. Because I'm not, if I was, you know, if this was, like, the diner and I was there, you know, 7 days a week, then I'd probably order something differently. But
are we old enough to, like, go sit at a diner daily?
But, no, I mean, if I'm only at a restaurant once a month or, you know, once every 3 months, and like, yeah, you just get the one thing you know you like, and... It's too risky to try the opposite, because if you order something new and then it's bad, you just wasted a bunch of money and you didn't eat any food.
Ooh, yeah, that is true.
It's high stakes.
It's like a double doink.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, so you've gotten to talk, we've talked about it, the varieties of ranch, so we've checked a box, we don't have to talk about this for a little while. But at some point, it'll need to come up again of like how amazing it is.
Sure.
The second point is I got to see Avalanche of Goals guy in person.
Okay, did you shake his hand?
No, I didn't talk to him because, well, I mean, it's between periods, right? And, like, I'm trying to catch up on everything and keep my charts full and all that stuff. But, like, you down at the other end of the press box is where the opposing radio guys sit. And so you walk down there and I was like, normally, well, you know, probably I would say four or five, maybe three teams bring radio. Not everyone brings radio.
ASU had radio when they came to Yoast back in the old days. Not last year, three years ago. Yeah, the time before that.
With Johnny Walker?
Yeah.
But I didn't really think about it because what do I care about, you know, Michigan State's radio guys? But then I remembered it was Penn State, and, you know, we had discussions about this man. We don't even know his name. He's just Avalanche of Goals guy.
Legendary figure.
And so I was like, I should get a look at him. And then the funny thing is later on that game, I was walking down across the press box to get probably a shot chart or something like that. And I hear this voice behind me be like, "Those are some sweet shoes, man." And I'd like, you know, I wear my sort of electric blue bright shoes to sporting events and turn around and it was Avalanche of Goals guy. And I was like, "Oh, this is great." And so I was like, "Thank you." We didn't really have much of a moment, but I'm going to tuck that one away in my heart, I think.
Well, you know, this is a case of when you should meet your heroes. You should wear...
He should be your hero because you're the play-by-play to be guy.
You should wear cowboy boots to the press box.
Cowboy boots. I don't know
if
I
do. You have cowboy boots?
I don't know if I've ever put them on in my life.
But you have them or you don't
No.
have
them? I mean, if I have them, I would have tried them on. I don't think I would buy cowboy boots without trying them on.
I think my ideal press box outfit would be to be the trench coat guy, but to wear cowboy boots and a cowboy hat with a trench coat. Just to see what happens.
I don't know if that fits. Trench coat guy winked at me.
Oh, wow.
That was weird. We were passing, and he just kind of winked, and I was like, I wonder... I'm just going to keep walking. But, if I wore cowboy... I don't have cowboy boots. If I had them, I would have to wear a hat, right? Like, you couldn't not.
I know people that wear cowboy boots without a hat.
Sure. And those people probably enjoy cowboy boots. But if I was going to put... If me, knowing my personality and the things that I generally wear and the things I generally do not wear, if I was going to wear cowboy boots, I think that it would be impossible for me to not also find a hat.
The only time I could see you wearing cowboy boots is if you were at, like, a themed event.
I don't know if I've ever dressed up for a themed event. I went
like a hoedown, you know?
Like a hoedown. Like in a barn? Have you been to a hoedown?
Yeah, well, in elementary school.
Of course.
When I was in third grade.
Every story starts in Alex's middle school.
No, this was elementary. When we were in third grade, my elementary school had a hoedown night, and we were all supposed to dress
elementary. Did anyone know?
It's a great photo. It's a photo of me, age 9, and then my brother, age 1, and we're both in cowboy.
So, when you plan themed events for 8-year-olds, it's for the parents, right? Like, do 7-year-olds, like, think about, other than for Halloween, if you're going to be...
small children square dancing.
I mean, I think I was in third grade, and we did it in gym class.
Did you ever do ballroom dancing in gym?
No.
We did that for some reason.
The girl that I was, like, corners with was very aggressive, and so she would want to, like, swing as hard as we could, so we'd, like, whip each other around. It was very... I didn't really look forward to it.
Here's your goal for 2022. Go to a hoedown event at the Diamondback Saloon.
Is it even open?
You know, out on 94?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I pass on the
way to
the airport.
Yeah, but I know people would have been there.
Right, but I don't think it's... Is it? I've never seen... Well, of course, I'm not picking people up at like 1 a.m., so like, I don't know if it's open, but I've driven by it a bunch of times.
My parents have been there.
Would you go with me? Oh. Not on a date. Like, I mean, you want to go crash it?
I mean... We could bring Brian and Seth, too.
Hey, the four of us could go head up the Diamondback Saloon. I would do that. If you can convince both of them to go to the Diamondback Saloon, I could be in for this.
The next time they bring me on the MGO pod, I'm going to discuss whether Brian would go to a hoedown.
Would we all get dressed up in cowboy gear? I think I would feel very comfortable feeling like I would not be the goofiest looking person in our group.
I think the person at the company who would fit in the best at a hoedown would be Patrick. Because he's already got that, like, outdoorsy hat. you know, and the, like...
Well, and he wears flannel shirts and stuff.
Yeah, I think he could fit in pretty well.
I don't know if he could do hoedown, but he could sell that he does hoedown better than any of the rest of us, probably. Man, those photos would be something. Okay, I think... Oh, I did want to, one other news note before we get into the games. This is more of a cool thing, but CW50 local broadcasted the Michigan hockey games.
Yeah, Channel 50, first time anyone has watched Channel 50.
Right, someone was like, that's the first goal scored on this channel since, like, the Red Wings did back in, I don't know.
Yeah, 1991.
Is it that long?
No, I don't know when it was, but...
But I was looking at their upcoming, Michigan's upcoming home games, and they play
they've got
Michigan State and Ohio State. The second Ohio State game is on BTN, but the other two Big Ten Plus games are on CW50. This is awesome. I hope they don't have the Big Ten Plus feed, though. Big Ten Minus feed.
They do have the BTN Plus feed.
The Minus feed?
Yes.
Or have they improved it a little bit?
I was watching it, and it was that feed.
It was bad?
No, it was the same feed.
Which is bad.
But it had no. It was slightly different. They used the cameras, I think, from BTN Plus, but then they did their own stuff because they when it started, I had forgotten they were on Channel 50, and so I put. By the way, I forgot the game was at 7:30, so I was racing home after picking up Culver's on Friday night to get home at 7:03, and thinking I was missing the start of the game, and then I turn it on, and then they're like. Oh, this isn't on until 7:30, and I was like...
You were like, great, I can eat my Culver's.
So anyway, but when I put it on, I was watching on BTN Plus, and so I was just, watching, and the broadcast starts, and they've got these graphics, and they've got, like, two guys in a booth that we see their faces, and I'm like, this isn't BTN. Like, what is this? But, like, the feed is the same as the camera.
Al Randall?
The cameras and, the little score thing, that was all the same.
Okay.
But, like, the rest of it was just, like, slightly jazzed up. But they kept calling Oscar Audio Eric Audio, so...
Well, we're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But we're trending in the right direction.
Last note, we got a retweet on our podcast.
Last week's?
Yeah, from Mel.
I wonder if he listens. I hope he does.
And
he
it wasn't your tweet. It was the, like... auto tweet from
Evgo Blah. Yeah. Well, he probably doesn't follow me. I mean,
yeah, he probably just saw that and is like, oh.
Evgo Blah, I've heard of them. Did he put any additional punctuation in?
No, that he was just like, retweeted it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, because I only discovered it because I just clicked on that tweet and I was like, let's see what knuckleheads are retweeting. And then
one of the
two were Mel, and I was like, whoa.
He's a pucklehead. Anyway, that joke didn't go so well. All right. I had a good lead-in when you were talking about trending forward, or we were talking about trending forward, and I was going to say Michigan was also trending forward because Thomas Bortolo and Jacob Truscott were back this weekend, which is a positive.
Yep.
I mean, Bortolo maybe didn't have his best series of his career, but...
Well, this is Bortolo's big moment now with the Olympics.
Better to have him on the ice than wearing a safari hat in the press box like a couple weekends ago. Anyway, speaking of fashion choices, this game started pretty good for Michigan because my first note was, that Bortolo and Truscott were playing, and my second one was Michigan's goal because Samuskevich and Hughes sort of come in on a 2-on-2 and, like, everyone thought this goal was really great. You were like, wow, this is some terrible defense by Penn State, but it's a 2-on-2 sort of kind of crammed to the right side, and Samuel sort of fumbles the puck as they come across the blue line, and both defensemen are like, oh, I'll clear it, and neither of them even touch it, and he just sort of flips it between them, and Hughes goes right around and finishes a goal, and you're like, oh, it's 1-0 very quickly in this game.
Well, by the way, Luke Hughes is now up to, after the other goal in the other game, he's up to 9 on the season.
Yeah.
And on, like, 18% shooting, which is, like, the NCAA version of the Cale Makar season currently. But, I mean, I just took two screen caps. One of them, when they are both, the Michigan players are both at center ice, and the Penn State defenders are both at the blue line.
And they're in good position, right?
And then there's a second image, 3 seconds later, where the two are, like, tackling Samo, and then Hughes is all alone behind them.
With
and
the puck.
It took 3 seconds to get between. Like, that's bad.
Yeah. I mean, it was a nice finish for Hughes.
And it was not the only time on the weekend that it was kind of a disaster when they were having to, like...
Well, as good as Penn State has...
defend in transition.
As good as Penn State has been over the last 5 or 6 years, it's not been because they've had the best blue line.
No, but that can't happen.
Well, sure. Then the next thing that I have is that Portillo makes a save on almost a 2-on-1, so Michigan goes about 3 games basically without giving up an odd man rush. And then there was a couple times in the Friday game that Penn State almost did, but Portillo had a nice save. KJ took an interference penalty, and Penn State got their first power play of the game and did nothing, which didn't happen on all of their power plays. They got a couple that were decent ones, but Michigan's penalty kill is becoming something to talk about.
For the game, they got 3 shots on 11 minutes of power play time.
That's not very good.
That's not good.
I don't know how many attempts they have. You know, and the shots on...
They had 5 shots, but they gave up 3 shots. So they finished in 11 minutes of 5-on-4 time. They finished +2 in shot differential.
I mean, that's pretty bad. I know you need to hit the net to score, but, Michigan, I think it was in the Saturday game, had a pretty good power play, and, they didn't get any shots, but, they moved the puck so well, and, 3 of their shots went wide, and 1 of them was blocked, and, they just didn't execute right at the very, very end. But, so I think you can have a good power play without getting a ton of shots. It's just sort of a better metric that we have to... kind of track, hey, how threatening are you? Kind of.
Penn State was... oof. They had 5 shot attempts on the power play in the game on Friday.
Yeah, it's not good. Especially considering we're about to talk about Moyle's 5-minute major, which is at least his, third?
I would
of
have
the
to
year,
look that up,
but I mean, I remember so, at least one other time.
I thought the one in the Saturday game, the Summers one, was kind of through the looking glass, which so many of these are. The Moyle one was no question. I mean,
yeah, and he didn't really argue.
That's a bad, bad hit, and no reason for that. Hit from behind, right in the numbers, face first into the boards, no question.
So, I mean, earlier this year, we were talking about how Michigan is getting a bad rap, and they're just sort of... have a reputation now, so anything that's kind of close, referees are tending to just be like, it's from Michigan, let's get them out of here, because that's what they do, or whatever.
Which is still so bizarre, given the way they play.
True, but now you can look at, the Summers thing, I thought, we'll talk about that later, but this one, like you said, was a bad penalty, and, I mean, they're doing these. I mean, the Van Wy one against, I think it was Notre Dame. He had another one against
somebody
else.
That one was bad. This one was bad. Obviously, the one on Duluth against Michigan. I think those are the 3 worst we've seen this season.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a couple questionable ones, but there's a number of other ones that are what are you going to do? And, how do you coach this stuff out of people? I mean, I know you're going to say you're not a hockey coach, but, there are some things that you just can't do anymore. You just can't do them. And this is one of it, especially because we're talking about what can derail Michigan seasons, because they're playing well and they're moving along at a high pace and probably on track to get a 1 seed, even if they don't win the conference or whatever. But one thing that you don't want to do in a random tournament game is get a 5-minute major and give some good power play that you come across 5 minutes to get 3 goals.
It definitely, it's at the point where it just feels like this is a scheduled thing that happens every game. Here's our 5-minute major today. And that should not be what's happening.
Yeah, I didn't think that Penn State was great on this. Portillo did have a couple of saves I wrote down, and Power had a really nice tie-up on the backside. You mentioned that to basically prevent a goal. I thought Edwards had a really nice layout play with his stick to deflect a pass from what would have been an open shot, too. And then Michigan even gets their traditional odd man rush on the penalty kill. I think they had a 3-on-1, and Van Wy just kind of didn't even get a pass or shot away. But overall, I thought that kill was pretty good, and it was kind of indicative of the weekend of them on the penalty kill. And then right after that, Penn State also gets a guy kicked out. And when you look at the replay of this one, this was a little more... Unfortunate for Penn State, fortunate for Michigan, because it looked like the referee's skate hooks, Schoen, is that how you say it? S-C-H-O-E-N, Schoen, Schoen. Hooked his foot, and then that's what, like, propelled him and threw him off balance into Duke, and that's how he kind of rammed him into the ice.
And yeah, so I remember that one very clearly.
But I thought it was very beneficial for Michigan, because I don't... That's a situation where, yeah, it's unfortunate for Duke to get that kind of hit, but it's not because the other player was A, trying to, or B, like, even almost, like, it was his fault. It's sort of like a gunner who gets pushed into the punt returner, like, yeah, by his own team. You know, like, that's not really, it shouldn't really even be a penalty. But Michigan definitely took advantage of it, because while I was typing that out and taking a note, Matty Beniers scored 7 seconds in on an open shot from the slot, and within, I think, 45 more seconds, KJ gets a rebound at the near post and stuffs it past Audio, and it's 2-3 now after the Hughes goal. And so before you even know what happens on this power play with, like, 4-plus minutes to go, Michigan's up 3-0, the period's over, and this is a runaway.
Yeah, I mean, they go into the break up 3-0, and you kind of feel like, well, the game's over now. Like,
especially if they get another one, and they have 4 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, they were just kind of controlling play, had the lead. I mean, that, you know, to me just seemed sort of like that's it.
Yeah, and then they come back out, and they get one really good look in the in those 4 minutes. You had a Bortolo, Duke, DeSamo, which is kind of a line that we sort of identified that could be interesting going forward, but sort of a tic-tac-toe look, and it was saved. And Samo had a really good look, but Audio bailed him out, because if that goes in, the game probably is over, despite Michigan basically doing nothing else on those the remaining 4 minutes. Then, so, Summers gets a penalty after that, a tripping call, and Penn State has their second power play, and Michigan gets two odd man rushes. Two-on-one and a breakaway, and neither of them really threatened. I think the breakaway forced a save. The 2-on-1, I think, with the pass was deflected. But, like, this is... I wonder if this is something that they're trying to do. Like, if this is, like, not just a pre-scout, because they seem to do it against everyone, but, like, remember, Johnny Beecher had, like, what, 4 breakaways in 2 or 3 games just on the penalty kill? And they're... And Van Wy had one earlier, and now they get 2 more on this 2-minute... I mean, they're finding ways to get up and out of the zone when you're down a man. Maybe they're sensing other power plays are being aggressive, or they're just looking for it. I mean, I think this is a good way to try to jumpstart Johnny Beecher, because he's been having a rough go the last month or two, but it's an interesting way to be productive.
Well, you know, when you have speed in your penalty killers, that always creates the opportunity, especially because a lot of times power plays play often like they have more space than they do. On the ice, and they do stuff like drop passes and all that kind of stuff to try and really make it seamless, but that does create opportunities to counterpunch if you get the turnover and you have speedy enough guys on the ice.
Yep, and speaking of speed, Jack Summers jumped up in the play right after that to try to keep a puck in, and was beaten back to his spot, and Michigan finally gave up an odd man rush for the first time since, I want to say, that second Ohio State game. And it was a breakaway, but Portillo shut it down. And then Beecher got another breakaway. So the second period was free-flowing, I will say. I think I had Michigan at, like, 8 odd-man rushes in the game, and they had most of those in that second period. They got another 2-on-1, but they just could not connect on these. And that's kind of a frustrating situation, because we talked about the beginning of the year. All right, basically, this the way that they play defense, what's going to happen is they are going to attack, especially with their defensemen, and they're going to give up a few odd man rushes. But they might create 8 to 10 a game with how they're being able to beat teams in transition. The problem is that they are doing it but not scoring. And, I mean, I don't know if it's like, should you work on, like, shootout moves or just breakaway... I'm not sure how you kind of fix that. Is that just something you either do or don't do, or is it like a finishing drill?
I mean, a lot of times it's just the simple fact of you don't quite have that, you know, a ton of that skill at the NCAA level. And if the goalie is good enough, then that's just kind of how it goes, you know? And with Michigan, if it's your better guys doing them, sure. But, I mean, again, like Beecher and Van Wy get these, and Luke Morgan gets these. And, like, you know, that happened. I mean, you know, how many breakaway goals do you see in the given college hockey game? I mean, not that many. You see a lot of, like, sometimes 3-on-1 goals, that sort of thing. But you're going to miss some of those chances just because you don't have, like, an elite shooter a lot of times. Unless it is that guy, it's just that, like, Brendan Brisson isn't normally the beneficiary of those breakaways or a lot of those.
Well, Bortolo, I don't think, has the speed, because you see him sort of get out a couple of times, and he's been run down.
Well, Bortolo's always looking for the pass, and that slows down you know?
Yeah. Portillo had another nice period, I thought, making a couple of saves, as Michigan's defense was not quite as good as it was early on, but... Ethan Edwards, I also wrote down a couple things about him, is you're seeing him not only, like, carry the play forward, but he's picking and choosing certain spots to jump up and take shots. He jumped into the slot a couple times, he jumped back door once, and guys hit him with passes. And sort of that's what you kind of want to see, because you're starting to see the game. You've obviously talked about how he's definitely an offensive defenseman and has those capabilities with his skating, but now he's starting to pick his spots a little better. And, you know, to me, it just seems only a matter of time before one of those is going to go in for him.
Yeah, you hope so.
And obviously the other guy that was doing similar things all weekend was Luke Hughes. He did that very early on. He had a couple plays in the second period, and then maybe even one later in the third, where he just basically skated circles around everybody. He shows pretty much on a nightly basis why he's, I mean, he's Michigan's best skater, right? Especially with the puck. I mean, it's not really close.
No.
So 2 periods, 3-0. They didn't get one in the second. You're kind of like, hey, you have all these odd man rushes. You got to get one, maybe two, with all those opportunities. Blow this game out, end it.
I mean, I still wasn't feeling super threatened going into that third period.
No,
you had
but...
a 3-0 lead. You were still really in control of the game.
But when your defense is playing really, really well and you score a touchdown and then you kick a couple of field goals and you kick another field goal, you're like, this feels like it should be a 4-score game, but it's really 2.5. And so
depends
you're like,
on what team you're watching.
All right. Well, I was going for an analogy, but if you'd like to nitpick.
Well, no, I'm saying that situation sets up differently if I'm watching the Lions or if I'm watching the Buccaneers or whoever, right? Like, if you're a Lions fan, that is absolutely in the front of your mind, but I'm not really in the B-pone a lot with Michigan hockey, so I'm not, like, sitting here like, oh, well, if we don't have the 4-0 lead, we know where this is headed.
But it's kind of like that in sports of where you're like, if you don't take your opportunities, sometimes the other team gets a couple, and then all of a sudden it's a game again. And that's kind of what happened to Michigan, as everything is kind of starting all right, and then Pasta just loses the puck in his slot, gets brought down. I don't think it was a penalty. It was just taken away from him.
That was a very stupid play by him, because it was kind of like when the quarterback starts running 15 yards backwards before he's sacked. I mean, he picks up the puck in the neutral zone and skates right into the danger area of his own zone and then starts losing it and then keeps skating backwards even as he's losing it fully.
Yeah.
And I mean that...
Yeah, not the smartest play he's probably ever made. And then, but the shot was good. Like, puck
picked
the corner. Wasn't really anything Portillo could do. Right up in the top.
There was a lot of
right,
bodies moving around, too.
Yeah, so it's 3-1. You're like, all right, well, that was pretty dumb, but whatever. They're pretty much still in control. And then this is where you get sort of those take your chance, get it or not, and then the other team gets a chance where Summers, I thought, made a really nice pass to Blankenberg. Weird, because the pass was from basically the blue line down to the net, and Blankenberg almost puts one away, but Audio makes a save, and on the ensuing rush, it's 2-on-1 the other way, probably because Blankenberg is down by the net, something that will happen when you put your defenseman forward. And you have a 2-on-1 going the other way, and Wall picked a corner for Kevin Wall, I believe his name is, picked a corner for Penn State, and it's 3-2, and there's still plenty of game left.
Well, I'm watching that play right now, and you have this pinch down in the corner, and I can't make out whose number that is that goes in to pinch and puck support. If it's Blankenberg down low, then it's got to be a forward who's up there. But the number made me think it was Ethan Edwards, because Summers is on the back end, obviously. But I don't know who it is, but he goes in for the old do-or-die pinch. that doesn't work. Now you've got the 2-on-1, and then Summers, you know, doesn't do the thing you have to do in that situation, which is you can't allow the pass.
Yeah.
If the guy shoots and scores, he shoots and scores, but you can't allow the pass, and he allows the pass, and now you're kind of like, oh, boy.
And then it gets dicey, and Michigan felt like they're kind of sitting on a lead, and you have a couple of plays. Portillo had... It wasn't a wander, but it was like a shot that came in and he sort of stuck his stick out to knock it down. There's no one really in the zone, and it kind of bounces down and like just rolls wide of the net behind him, and everyone's kind of like, whoa, like he almost sort of tips it into his own net, but bit of a noteworthy play. And then Power had a little bit of a fumble in his own end. The puck got in the slot and went wide. I mean, Michigan is living right on the edge at this point as the third period goes along. And then Bortolo takes an interference in front of the net, I think in the offensive end, and Penn State has their fourth power play. They get a couple of shots. It was a little... I wrote that this one was a little dicier. I thought this was their best of the night. They kept the zone a little bit longer. They created a couple more opportunities. Michigan had, I thought, three pretty good kills, and then this one, Penn State had their way a little bit more. They didn't get the goal, but it set up a little nicer. And then you have the Samuel breakaway, which is just, I think this was either the seventh or the eighth odd man rush, and at some point you're like, someone's got to get one, and it's finally not Beecher or Morgan or Van Wise. We're talking about Samo, and he's a guy that you would probably take on a breakaway.
Yeah, and I mean, Audio, to his credit, was very good in this game.
Yes.
Came up big in a lot of those moments to keep Penn State in it.
And then Power had a really nice move, and this is like the Owen Power ceiling that you saw there, where he's bringing the puck out of the zone, hits a guy on the wing, kicks it to an extra gear, gets the return pass right down the slot, and fires it just like 2 inches wide. And that shot was like as perfect for my angle. As I'm like peering down watching this play, you can see as he's skating directly away from me, and the shot is just right in my line of vision, and he misses the far post by like maybe 2 inches. Otherwise, it's 4-2, and that's ball game. The last thing I do want to get into this, because Michigan does hold on, and they do win, but they get a power play late. KJ makes a nice move, gets hauled down, and it's 5-on-3 for a while. And we talked about their 5-on-3 not being very good against Notre Dame when they had a couple chances. They got another one against Niagara, but Niagara, as you said, had some of the worst 5-on-3 defense possible and got a goal on it, so we're going to throw that one out. But this time, one of the things that they did was they set up in an X formation, which was a little different than we'd seen before, and they had two guys below the goal line. So basically, you had a box with a guy in the middle, and they could pass it all the way around, and you forced Penn State to defend, like, base, you know, 360 degrees.
Yeah, I thought the setup was interesting. They had a few chances on it, and then just continued to not be able to actually score.
But do you like that, like, in a 5-on-3? Do you like sort of how you put guys below the goal line, too, and kind of move the play down closer towards the net instead of having everybody farther up high?
I mean, I get the argument for it. I don't really have a preferred 5-on-3 setup, but I see where the logic comes from. I'd probably just rather have one there.
More position just behind the net?
Yeah, but it's something I'd, you know, be interested to see a little more of and tinker with. The problem is you just don't get a lot of those opportunities,
right,
in general, so you only get so much game run on any given strategy.
And how much practice time do you really want to
devote
to like a 5-on-3 power play? I mean, some, I think, a little bit. But for this team, it's interesting because you have a lot of pieces that can fit into unique spots, and this is a very unique spot. And this is something that I feel like Michigan, when they have a 5-on-3, not scoring is almost not an option. When you have that kind of talent with puck movement and everything, and unless you're just, you know, goalies are making saves. But formation should be pretty simple. I mean, it's highly talented guys who are going to the NHL who have probably do this in their spare time.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting thing going forward. Michigan does hang on. Portillo makes a big save kind of late with about a minute to go, but Michigan escapes 3-2 in a game that was 3-0 pretty quickly, and it gets a little interesting.
Yeah, sometimes it goes that way, but the win is the win, so you move on.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
After breathing a sigh of relief leaving Costa on Friday, we get to the Saturday game. This was very different, but yet also similar in the end. The first period, did you take a nap? Because I almost did at certain points.
I think of what was going on Saturday.
Well, that's exactly the point. Nothing. Like,
well, before that was like when the Cincinnati game was ending, right?
That's true.
Against
so,
the Raiders.
I definitely had
also like, Leafs Blues on Hockey Night in Canada was a barn burner that night, 6-5 in regulation. So
sure,
that was waking me up if the other game wasn't.
Well, this was definitely exciting, but the first period, I remember walking down to get the like shot chart, and I think between both teams combined, there was like 3 shots from the house. Like, it was just, like, it was very what you would not expect from a Michigan-Penn State series, but both teams were probably being very cautious and wanting to not give it away early, and they did not. I thought Penn State played a little bit better. They had more shots, a little more control, and, you know, Michigan was more on their heels, and they got, I think their only odd man rush of the game came with Beecher getting free down the left on 3-on-2. They got the puck over to him, and he got in with a pretty good look, but went high and wide. That was probably Michigan's best chance of the period. Duke had sort of a spinorama, a wraparound type shot that he had, I'd say maybe a quarter to a fifth of the net open to shoot at, and it just went wide. You had a great pass from Power to get out to Lambert, who had a save, but again, none of these are like phenomenal chances. And Penn State didn't have great looks either. This was a nice period for Portillo as he kind of made saves but wasn't super challenged. And I think like that's kind of the thing that Michigan needs to do this year is that you have a pretty good goalie who makes kind of great positional saves because he's massive. And so if you just use him as like taking up, you know, a third to half of the net and shield people into that area, I mean, what? There's really nothing to shoot at. So fire away all you want. You're going to hit a Swede. I mean, right? I mean, that's just kind of... that. When you have a goalie like that, you set your defense up like that, right? I mean, if you have a ginormous nose tackle that is just going to eat people that run up the middle, you're like, feel free to run up the middle. He will eat you. Vince Wilfork.
Sure.
All right. So that is... that's all I have for the first period, as you know, it was pretty much all it was. The second period was everything the first period was not, where right away Penn State gets in on a 2-on-1 and Portillo has to make a save, and then Pasta gets called for a high stick that was, I looked on the review, and it was kind of goofy and unintended, but he did hit the guy in the cage. And Portillo didn't start great, fumbled to save a little bit. He did have a couple rebound issues with rebounds throughout the game. But then we get one of the biggest gaffes I've seen in quite a long time at Yost, as Oscar Audio gets very ambitious with an attempted stretch pass and hits, I believe, a wide-open Jimmy Lambert right near the blue line, who him and Nolan Moyle come in on a 2-on-0 and play catch about 5 or 6 times before Nolan Moyle is able to cut one over the prone Oscar Audio for a 1-0 shorthanded goal.
I mean, let's not forget that Yost is the same place where that tragedy against Wisconsin happened with Bortolo in front of the net. So
that's true.
There have been some bad gaffes.
That was bad. You don't get that many from goalies like this, though. There are fumbles and such, and that's yes. But this was like a This was a Matt Hasselbeck. We're going to take the puck and we're going to score pass.
Well, so this play is basically Yeah, I mean, it's basically whenever a quarterback sees a receiver that has got to step on the corner and just doesn't see the linebacker underneath. Because if you watch the play, both teams are in the midst of a change, and Penn State has a guy open with no Michigan defenseman up at the offensive blue line. And you do see that on power plays where the goalie comes up and makes the stretch pass. Problem is he doesn't see the linebacker underneath who's right there. And
in this particular case is wearing a bright yellow jersey. they were not wearing their whites. They were wearing their bright maize jerseys.
And then, you know, and that pass, you know, he probably gets away with it if it isn't the period of the long change. That's the other half of it, right?
That's a good point, yeah.
If his bench is right there, that's not the issue. The problem is the Michigan bench is closer to him, and the guys are getting right off the bench right there. And so then, and they played it really well in terms of putting that away. Boom, 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 in.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much passing, not too little, perfect amount, got the goalie down, nothing he could do.
I was terrified they were going to miss the net. Personally. I mean, you're 2-0, and you're in that situation, like, 90-some percent of the time, it has to be a goal. Like, you can't...
Yeah.
In practice, how many times is this saved? Almost never, probably. And they finally got it, and like you said, they just kept passing. And that's what you want to do, because hockey is all about moving the goalie. And if you can move the goalie, you don't really have to have a great shot. And they did it. He was prone, flipped it up, 1-0. It looks like you're off to another nice start again. Portillo, at this point, playing pretty well. A couple rebounds, but he had a really nice save. On a kind of a walk-in shot at the end of this power play. And then you have Pasta put to Beniers in front, and Audio makes a big save, and at that point it was really close to being 2-0, but it's not. And this is sort of like those situations where you get, you know, one team that has their chances, and this is what I was referring to in the previous segment of, you know, if you don't take your chances, the way that sports works sometimes, the other team gets a bounce or two, and all of a sudden, if they take theirs, it's the game is very, very different. And that's basically what happens, is that I didn't see this super clearly how this happened, but there was a shot that came on Portillo from, like, the right side, it looked like, and he's kind of on the post. It looks like he is, but then all of a sudden, he's, like, there and then just falls over, and the puck squirts out from underneath him.
No, the guy on the side, it was like one of those plays... A lot like, if you remember, the goal that was the Stanley Cup final winning goal of the Red Wings against the Penguins in 2008, where Fleury makes the save, and he thinks he has it, and it's actually behind him. And so the referee's letting the play continue, and yet the whole Pittsburgh team and Fleury is standing there like, why isn't the whistle blown?
Because he doesn't have it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is like Portillo's there, and he thinks he has it, and he's just waiting for the play to be over and the whistle to blow, but the whistle's not blowing because it's actually right there. And he's just kind of sitting there awkwardly, and then the Penn State guy comes over and kind of just you know,
jams away a few times.
Chimney sweeping, you know. Just kind of furiously jamming.
Curling sweeping.
Yeah. Going right at it, and then...
Well, that's not as bad on
Portillo. He kind of, like, falls over, and then it goes in. But, like, that is not... If you watch that play, I didn't love Michigan's effort on that play to begin with.
On defense?
Yeah, that whole sequence leading up to it. The guys are just skating around the circle, and Michigan's guys are just kind of standing there. But the shot itself comes from a bizarre angle with no traffic in front. Like, that just, you got to have that.
Yeah.
Like, you have to. Even if you don't, I mean, the fact that he didn't know where it was is, like, the problem on the play. Because it wasn't a threatening shot.
Right. And, yeah, usually those, and that's sort of what we were talking about previously, is when you have, you know, that kind of a goalie who's just big, you just say, yeah, go ahead and shoot from these weird angles, because he's not going to give you much to shoot at. But it was kind of interesting, because both goalies play pretty well on Friday, and then within minutes, they both kind of make their own version of a mistake, and now it's 1-1, and they kind of canceled each other out. But that would not be Portillo's last bad goal to give up, but he fumbled another shot, and probably this one was, I think this one was just coming in over the blue line, and a shot was ripped from not quite in the slot, but just just above it, and I thought he could see it pretty clearly, and he just kind of gives up a rebound right to Christian Sarlo in front of him, who just taps in the open net.
Yeah, that's like when the ground ball hits your, like, hand, you know, your wrist and not the glove, and it just bounces right off that part and down. And again, it was tough to see an angle about whether it was obstructed, but it didn't look like it.
I didn't think so.
So that's also not great.
So it's 2-1 Penn State at this point. A pretty easy finish for Christian Sarlo. That's, like we said, pretty much all on Portillo. You just, sometimes you make those mistakes. And the funny thing is, like, you know, we talk about this before, but how many goals have we remember kind of pinning on him throughout the year?
And this was his second bad game.
Right, with the second yeah. Notre Dame game being the other one. But other than that, I mean, he's still probably at 6 goals, maybe, that are on him throughout the whole year. Something like that. Beniers, and then Michigan kind of starts to get it going a little bit. Beniers is open on the doorstep, and I didn't see how he did this, but he was basically at the tip of the crease and somehow missed the goalie, the net, and put it in the mesh on a good pass. And you could see him, like, just throw his head up and stick up in the air, like, oh my gosh, like, that was such a good chance, and how did I even do that? We were playing in an IM soccer game one time, and my buddy got the ball, and he was no more than 2 yards from the goal and somehow skied it high with him and the goalie. And you're just like, I don't even know from a physics standpoint how you, like, miss a goal from there. But it was that was one to remember. I did not think this was Owen Power's best game. He had a few fumbles at his own blue line. He had one in his own zone that led, couple that led to odd man rushes. Others just led to decent chances. This is Kevin Wall coming flying in on a breakaway, and Portillo made a save to keep it 2-1. But right afterwards, Michigan has a pretty bad change, and Penn State's able to capitalize, getting a 4-on-2. They move the puck a couple of times, and Michigan or Portillo actually makes back-to-back saves. So you have these chances where now Michigan's played pretty good defense for multiple games. They've played pretty good transitional defense, and now it's the period where it's all kind of going to hell. Like, they gave up, I think, 5 or 6 odd man rushes in this period, and some of them are individual mistakes, some of them like this are like team mistakes, but we haven't seen that from Michigan in probably over a month.
Yeah, this is kind of where the iceberg is, like, just falling apart.
Just shelves
crumbling,
are just,
yeah,
going into the ocean. So it's still 2-1. But then you have one of the power plays, as I was saying earlier. He had a gaffe at the attacking blue line.
Well, the puck...
Are you you don't think so?
So, Van Wyk comes over to hold it in, and he gets his stick lifted. So then it comes out past the blue line, and Power comes over and is in sort of like a situation where he has to try and make a play,
mm-hmm.
where he needs to just throw it deep or do something, and two guys converge, and then he's not able to make that play,
mm-hmm.
and then from there it's a 2-on-1.
Right, and then Grattan has the chance to beat Portillo on a 2-on-1, so they score.
And I didn't see that one, because, again, we don't have all the angles you get in the NHL.
Yeah.
From the backside, which I wanted to see, because Portillo really did not look happy with that goal, and it didn't look like a very good shot.
Hmm.
It looked like it kind of got through right on the body. Like, it looked like almost sort of between the glove and the pad on the left side.
Hmm.
But if you look at that play, Portillo immediately just goes like this, you know, with his head in the air. And it, I mean, again, it was not like a bar down.
Do you want to show our listeners again what the head motion was there?
I mean, it wasn't like a really good shot. You could tell that. I need to see it more degraded. But that one also didn't look particularly great.
No, but it's also 2-on-1. And, like, it's, while goalies can make those saves depending on the shot quality and all that, and I get that too, it's just that, you know, in this period, there were, I mean, he probably saved 2 previous ones that should have been goals, right? You have a 4-on-2, you have a 1-on-0, you know, and then, yeah, you'd like him to make this one too, potentially, if you can get all of them.
I mean, let's be clear, this is college hockey we're talking about, and we are talking about Michigan and not being able to convert their chances. Like, in general, the goalie's expected to win a lot of those situations.
In odd man rushes?
I mean, to some extent, yeah.
All right.
I mean,
we might disagree on that, but...
I mean, you expect, if you're a good team, you expect your goalie to make, you know, a good chunk of those saves for you.
Potentially, yeah. I'm just more approaching hockey in general, and, like, when you give up chances like this, in theory, like, those are a lot of times as good a looks as you get in hockey.
Sure, but that's why their score isn't 8-7 in every game.
Well, it's, yes. And so it's 3-1... Getting late in the second period, it doesn't, like, we've seen Michigan come back a number of times, so it doesn't feel over, but it's very, like, frustrating, and, like, the life really isn't in the team. Like, it's not like they were playing out of their mind and just made a couple of messes in the second period. They were probably outplayed a little bit by Penn State in the first period. In the second, they just make mistakes, and Penn State's playing pretty well at this point, not really giving anything away. They're just taking advantages of gaffes that Michigan has. And, you know, we've seen that in the Wisconsin series this year. This happened to them last year where they'd play a nice game and get a win, and the second game just make a bunch of mistakes. And it's kind of trending towards that, but then we get a gift from Jack Johnson's younger brother, Kenny Johnson, who decides to rock Matty Beniers in the face after the whistle in front of the Penn State net. Kenny Johnson, I think, at one point was coming to Michigan. He was never, like, good enough to be, like, a recruit, but there was talk of him being a walk-on. I think, you know, that was sort of always the plan, but ended up at Penn State. So there's probably, you know, this is a game that means a little more to him than just your average Big Ten game, and he has a chance to take out Matty Beniers, and does it way too late, and does it illegally. And then Michigan has their first power play, which, you know, they needed. I think I remember tweeting something like, you know, if this is one of those chances that they need to get through, because we're late in the second, and to get one back sends you to a whole different setup in heading to the third period. And this was exactly what I was describing in the first segment of, you can have a good power play and not get any shots because you're getting chances. Now, obviously, you'd like to get those looks on net and you'd like to score one at some point, but Michigan's power play looked really dangerous. They moved the puck really well, had Duke hit Blankenberg back door, but it just got through him. He had an open net. They had a couple other looks that the puck didn't find the frame, but it's kind of what you wanted out of a power play. And then as soon as the power play ends and Johnson is leaving the box, heading back to the net, you do get the redirect from Beniers, who tallies as he gets a tip in a few feet outside the crease, and it's all of a sudden 3-2, and it just Yost feels differently now. Like, it looked like, hey, we made some mistakes, now we got one back, it's 3-2, this team can score goals as fast as anyone, and it feels like if they can get any sort of momentum, carries any momentum into the third, they can pull this one out.
Watching it at the time, I didn't see the tip initially on the broadcast. And okay. So the way that one just kind of slowly got through the goalie, I was like, wow, that's a terrible goal to give up. And then I watched it like, oh, it's a deflection. Okay, sure.
So then it's okay.
I mean, it's, you know, more understandable then.
The last thing I actually have written down is, like, Michigan had a great chance to tie the game with like 5 seconds left, as Owen Power gets really deep in the zone and is one-on-one with the goalie on the side. They get him the puck, and he hits the post. And, you know, maybe on a better night for him, that goes in, and it's 3-3, and then maybe it's even a walkover in the third period. But they did get chances and, you know, just didn't finish a lot of them. In the end, finished enough of them, but it was still maybe a weekend where you think, we probably could have done a little bit better in the finishing department. So going into the third, pretty much as the period starts, Hughes gets behind the defense again, has a really nice pass from Matty Beniers, and Hughes just with a really great finish. I mean, we talk about his skating, but his finishing ability is up there as well.
That's another one that really not great from Penn State, where, like, you've just got to put some resistance on the guy coming past you. Like,
yeah,
you're there at the line. Yes, they did a decent job around Beniers, even though he got the pass through, but you just can't let the guy skate right by you. Like, you have to do at least something, you know, obviously not rising to interference, can't just tackle him, but you've got to either follow him or
notice him?
Yeah, you know, just do something. I mean, it's, again, yeah, just the rush defense from the defenseman in those situations is just so poor on those two Hughes goals.
So it's 3-3 right away, and you're like, and then when they got the third one, I was like, I'm feeling pretty good now, because they've come back, and the way that Michigan just has looked in the last couple weekends, you know, and they've done it throughout the year too, it's not like it's just the last couple weekends, but you just feel pretty good, especially with the talent and the energy that's starting to go in Yost. And that's when right after that is when Summers gets his 5-minute major, and he's thrown out of the game. And Like, you thought this one was not as blatant. I thought he hit him in the head, and it was like, well, not a great weekend for Jack Summers, and it ended on an injection.
We didn't get to see a lot of good replays of it. I mean, it's, again, like, those... I think the ones, like the Moyle one, where you've got a guy stationary and you're coming in stationary, I think the ones like that where the guy's coming in and you just kind of, you know, two guys that are skating hard and they, you know, knock into each other, go for the hit, and then, you know, maybe the guy lowers his head a little bit right before you get the hit. I mean, to me, those are just so really hard to, like, deliberately headhunt in those situations. And I didn't feel like that one really was. But, again, my whole thing is this is all through the looking glass. Like, it's just, I don't know, on a lot of these. I mean, it's the same way I feel about targeting in college football. People are always like, is that targeting? I don't know. Throw a dart at the dartboard. And that's
because wearing a winged helmet is probably targeting, and it's probably just like, 5-minute major.
I have no idea whether that's a good call or not a good call.
Well, Penn State hits the post pretty early on in their 5-minute major, and it stayed out. Luckily for Michigan, Power had a bad defensive zone turnover that led to a nice big Portillo save to keep the game even. And then it kind of, Michigan got their momentum on the kill and finished it out. Penn State didn't threaten quite as much after that. And it was their second 5-minute major kill of the weekend. I believe they've killed 23 in a row, if I remember correctly. I think it was 20 on Friday, at the end of Friday's game, and then going into Saturday, I think they had two or three that they killed. They get one later. That's what it is. Yeah, sort of a throw-in at the end. But anyway, so they get through that, and then that's when Brisson finds a loose puck in the slot and just has a great shot inside the post and gives Michigan a 4-3 lead. I mean, we saw him heat up early on and just score a ton of goals, and he hasn't scored at that same rate because you probably don't score at that rate unless you're Kyle Connor in college hockey. But I don't know, his shot is got to be the best on the team, I think.
Yeah, and that's a tough goal for Penn State to give up, because that play starts 2-on-4 and the Penn State dudes come over and knock Bortolo off the puck and then just sort of pinballs, and then just this like just wicked shot out of nowhere, and suddenly boom, it's in the net, and you're like, whoa.
But that's what first-round talent does sometimes, right? Pulls something out of nothing and wins you a game, because that's pretty essentially much what it did. And then, you know, as the period goes along, like, I didn't think that Michigan had a ton of other opportunities, but they were...
I thought they closed the game down very well.
Right.
From that point
they just
forward.
Were in control.
Yep.
And it's not like there's four grade A's that they missed and they should have won 7-3 or something, but they played pretty well. There were some chances for Penn State as it got towards the end. Samuel turned the puck over in his own zone, and a shot hit the bar, which was kind of close. Portillo ended up having a face save, and then another chance that I thought Penn State was going to tie the game, and the shot went high. So they got away with that. There were a few chances for the Lions at the end, and then that's when the Pasta penalty came, and you got the third power play for Penn State. But at that point, it was pretty much pull the goalie and 6-on-4, and all it did was allow Michigan to ice the puck.
Yep,
and I think Beniers did, and that ended it. It went. They had a deflection that went wide right at the end. But not probably what we thought this weekend was going to be, especially after the first period or two on Friday, and even just previewing the whole thing going in. But like you've been saying, you know, all weekend online and on the podcast a little bit, you know, you get 2 wins, you get 6 points from two games, and that would provide 6 points when you would expect that when you look at these teams.
Just win.
We can glance a little bit around the Big Ten and take a look at next week's big matchup in Minneapolis. This week in the Big Ten, we had some interesting things happen. The one that was not was Wisconsin beat Michigan State twice. I have nothing to say about
that.
So
I just looked this up. Michigan State is, you want to guess where Michigan State is in Corsi?
In Corsi?
Yeah.
Is there a negative spot?
They
I'm guessing
are,
no.
They where do they rank out of?
Out of 59 teams?
59 teams.
I would say 52nd.
54th.
Oh, I was close.
42.8%.
That's not good.
No, with both games were almost identical. 75-59 in shot attempts in the one, 79-59 in the other. So nearly identical, both in favor of Wisconsin. And, like, again, that's what I said about MSU last week. Like, you're not a real contender until you're not doing that. Like, you just can't be outchanced significantly every weekend by every team, even the one that's, like, really bad and getting pounded by all the other Big Ten teams.
So do you think this is more than just lack of talent, but it's also approach?
I don't know. I mean, they don't have a super talented roster, but they don't have... You don't look at that, and you like. I mean, if you look at the recruiting profiles, they've got some drafted guys. Like, there's no reason that should be like that. I mean, I thought that Danton Cole did a good job getting them back to respectability, but now it sort of feels like they've taken a step back in the last couple seasons.
Or a step to the side. I mean, this is just kind of what they did, and like when they had no talent, this is what they did that won them some games.
Yeah,
But that only takes you to a certain point. Like, you don't win the league in the EPL by playing 10 guys in your own box all the time, unless you're like, you know, Chelsea years ago.
All I know is that it's not a good mental place for the few hardcore Michigan State hockey fans out there. A couple of them that I follow on Twitter were not handling those games very well.
Well, yeah, especially when that happens to Wisconsin. Like, against Michigan or Minnesota, you're like, okay, I can kind of see that a little bit more. But Wisconsin... last time we looked, is not oozing with talent.
No.
Probably the most interesting game of the weekend, or series of the weekend, I should say, is Notre Dame and Ohio State. Notre Dame beat Ohio State in overtime on Friday, 3-2, which gave Notre Dame 2 points and Ohio State 1. And then on Saturday, Ohio State looked pretty good in transition game. I think they got a couple of OMR goals to go up 4-1, and
that game is based, that series, I mean, we wanted the 3-3 split. It was 4-2, whatever. Basically got what we wanted. The two teams that are very similar in pairwise played, you know.
Pretty similar on the ice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really have any opinion about that. It doesn't change my view of either team.
I think it's all right because Ohio State, while this is during the Olympic time, that Ohio State does come to Yost, so Michigan will be able to host them versus they do have to go to South Bend. So.
But South Bend isn't scary anymore. Michigan sweeps every time they're in South Bend now, so...
It's just when they come here, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, you can't beat them in Yost, but you can always beat them in Compton.
Because that makes sense. And then the last series of the weekend, I was not expecting this when I started looking everything up, but Minnesota beat Alaska 4-1. It's about what you'd expect, and you looked at the numbers, and they were pretty heavily in favor of Minnesota. And then on Saturday, Alaska beat them 3-2. And close... Justin Close, who was in his first weekend of full-on duty, where he is the guy, saved 12 of 15 chances, which I did not see any of those goals, so they could be all breakaways for all I know, but 12 of 15 is not great?
Not really, no. You have to see what the situation was, and I wasn't watching those games, so...
It was interesting because McLaughlin and Nyes both got game misconducts.
Yeah, there was a lot of wrestling in both of those games.
Wrestling?
Yeah.
One of those was at the end of the game, though. So I don't know if that can you get a game misconduct after the game is over? And does that mean you don't play the next week then? Because that would be a big deal.
I don't know how that stuff works.
Because the Nyes one was at the end of the game.
So I'm not up on all of the sort of gopher stuff in terms of what's going on with all that. I looked up Matthew Nyes' name a minute ago, and it's all just articles about him going to the Olympics. So, doesn't look like...
I guess until we're told otherwise, we'll assume that they're both playing.
Yeah, for the moment.
For the record, for that game, the shots were 38-15 Minnesota, so they probably got goalied, is my guess. But they also gave up some goals... on a goalie that has yet to really prove himself, and they're going to be bringing in, you know, probably the number one scoring team in the nation, or right up there. Michigan is pretty good in most offensive numbers.
And by the way, that Alaska loss was a crusher for the pairwise. They dropped from, like, 8th or 9th to 12th.
Yeah, so they're the weekend. Not on the bubble, but getting close.
They're on the bubble now because you price in...
The Olympics.
The Olympics, and then you're in trouble.
Although they play Michigan State, and as we've seen...
Don't really need talent to win that one.
You don't really need to do a whole lot. So we'll just run through Minnesota's numbers real quick. It's not a lot different than they were other than the pairwise. They're 12th in pairwise, like you said, 15th in Corsi, so they do have the puck a decent amount of the time. Their power play is okay at 19%. Not great, but not terrible. There are worse power plays. They do have talent, obviously. 83% on the penalty kill. That's pretty good, I think. Not...
Yeah, fine.
It's fine. 14 drafted players, as we've noted, and highly drafted players at that. Not all of them, but a handful, and they do have good players like Lucius and Nyes, and Faber, I believe, is also up there. I think he was a second-round pick.
Well, Ryan Johnson was a first-rounder. Lecombe was a second-rounder.
Right. So they have plenty of high-end drafted talent, too. They have four guys that are scoring at over 0.75 points per game, so not a lot of star goals, but they do put the puck in the net a decent amount. And then this is where it gets kind of interesting. It's a very small sample size, but Justin Close's numbers are 2.04 GAA and 0.904 save percentage, and both of those numbers are better than Fontaine's.
Yeah, I mean, he played 147 minutes, so...
Right. That's the caveat.
And the but, 2 years prior, I mean, you look at the scope of his career, 714 save percentage last year in one game played, 786 the year before in three games played, 902 this year in four games played. So, eight total games, the career average is well under 900 between those three games. So
knowing all of that...
Also, by the way, Close is a little itty-bitty goalie.
Itty-bitty?
5'10", 175, full 1980s, like St. Cyr last year.
Who's having a nice year, I
for
think.
Quinnipiac.
For yeah. Quinnipiac, yeah.
He's also a rural Saskatchewan boy, absolutely middle of nowhere. Kindersley,
so,
Saskatchewan.
What do you expect this weekend, and what is Michigan's... Like, obviously you want to win both games.
It's also old.
Talking
1998 birthday.
Yeah.
And he could have, like, infinite
like,
more years in college if
like
he
you.
Wants.
you're a 99. So what do you expect? Like, what is Michigan's must-do at least this...
I mean, you have to win at least one.
Yeah.
But
you don't want to lose points.
You'd like to win both. I mean, because I think the ideal thing is if you can... Because the way this stuff always works is when you enter the month, you never go into the month saying, well, we have to win every game this month.
Because
but
that's unrealistic.
Now you've won four games this month and out of four you played. And now you have two against Minnesota, and you're thinking, okay, they're down their goalie, and it's going to be competitive games. If you could win both of those, then all of a sudden you just have to go to Madison. You could win both of those. And now you've done it. So that's sort of where it sets up. But the whole point is, you know, I felt like for me to feel pretty good about the prospect of the Olympics, they need to win the next four. You do that, here's what happens. You build up a big enough lead by which, like, you only, like, need to maybe split against MSU and OSU with your roster shorthanded and still be, like,
yeah.
in the driver's seat when the other guys come
I mean,
back.
if they...
So it's all about banking points before the guys leave.
If they win both this weekend, I mean, it's going to be really hard for Minnesota to win the league.
Because
they're
going
to lose guys, too.
It's hard for them to win the league right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but points-wise, I mean, they're still ahead of Michigan.
Yeah, I'm just saying in terms of the way their season is setting up right now, it's not good momentum-wise.
So you think that the team that's best chance to win the league then is?
I mean, I'm more worried about Notre Dame and Ohio State.
Both of them? Or one more than the
other? Well, one's got 3 points more than the other. I think Notre Dame's probably better than Ohio State, but Ohio State has more points right now, so shrug.
Because I thought when Michigan played Ohio State in Columbus, I mean, Ohio State did some good things, but two things about that. One, they had no players, which, granted, they will lose some players in a month when we see them at Yost. But the other thing is, you know, they were playing in a slush pit. So if you play on actual ice, it's going to probably benefit the team that has a little better skating. Now, Michigan will lose some of that skating, but, I mean, it's hard for me to see Michigan, like, losing points to many teams left on the schedule. They may split, but it's hard for me to see them going, you know, one and getting 1 point and giving up five to anyone left.
I mean, that Olympic spirit is going to be tough. Just in terms
of... Which is going to be four games.
Yeah, on your depth. And, I mean, again, it sets up well that you're playing Ohio State and MSU during that period and not Minnesota, just in terms of, like, that athletic component. But we shouldn't underestimate the challenge of dealing with the Olympics.
I agree.
Which is why it's important to bank points now.
And they have two series before that period begins. The first one is Friday night in Minneapolis. I believe that this game will be televised, yes, I think.
They're both televised.
Both, right? Televised. ESPNU.
Don't we always get the Bally Sports Minnesota feed through FSD, now BSD?
I think that this weekend is ESPNU and Big Ten Network. So, oh, okay. 9 p.m. Friday, ESPNU, and Saturday is 7:30 Eastern Time, Big Ten Network. So we will have good viewing experiences, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the schedule now. The Wisconsin first game isn't on anything but BTN Plus.
Well, so far, we will see.
So far, we will see. But then you get BTN, then you have Channel 50, then you have
FSD,
BSD,
or BSD,
then Channel 50, then BTN, then Peacock, all the way through.
Yeah, the Notre Dame Peacock series is going to be
interesting. If you have Comcast, you're set the rest of the way, pretty much.
Woo, cable!
Yes, but Comcast specifically, because you get Peacock through that.
That's true.
Do you want to guess, by the way, what the temperature is in Justin Close's hometown right now?
This seems like a good way to end a podcast. Negative 13.
Negative 9.
Oh, it's close again.
Do you know what that is in Celsius?
Not offhand.
Negative 23.
That's even lower.
Fahrenheit's better than Celsius, by the way. And I will die on that hill. Because a lot of the...
Are you going to explain it to us?
A lot of the imperial systems of measurement are not great versus metric in terms of the way they set up logically. But Fahrenheit is the one that makes a lot more sense. Celsius, I get more for, like, science, but in terms of the daily life, Fahrenheit makes a lot of sense, because 0 degrees is really cold, 100 degrees is really hot. Celsius, 0 degrees, obviously, is, you know, freezing-ish, right? And then 100 degrees is, like, you're dead. And so, and, like, you get these, like, big gaps in Celsius, right? Like, you have 13 degrees Celsius versus 19, like, that's a bit of a jump in terms of Fahrenheit, where Fahrenheit, you have more numbers in between. Like, a 5 jump in Celsius corresponds to, like, a 10 jump in Fahrenheit, and so, like, it's just a bigger, I don't know, it's weird, but I like Fahrenheit more.
The more you know with Alex Drain.
Listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.13 for Alex Drain and David Masternak. Come back next week, where we will be guessing the temperature of other towns in rural Saskatchewan.